everybody. Welcome into the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. Today's episode of Locked On Orioles is brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar that you can find. To get $10 off your first order of Built Bar, head over to builtbar.com and use the promo code Locked On. Today's episode, we will continue looking around the big leagues at former and current Orioles, either looking at where they were before the O's or where they are now. And we will talk about the Oakland Athletics today with Jason Burke. He is the host of Locked On Athletics. And we had scheduled this podcast before this week's news came out. So, you know, we still went into some former A's guys that were with the Orioles as well, like Renato Nunez, who we talked about. And we got into some other guys as well, TJ McFarland, who signed with the A's this offseason, and a few other guys on that roster as well. But, of course, the news coming out this week that the Oakland Athletics would no longer be paying their minor leaguers the $400 per week. They were paying them since the pandemic started and the season was put on hold. Again, a billionaire owner not paying $400 a week to minor leaguers. The math looked like it would add up to just a little over $1 million for the year for the team to pay everyone. Again, that's $1 million for a team that shells out millions to major league players and, of course, an owner who's worth over $2 billion. So that news came out, and it made it good timing to have Jason on. So that's where we will start in this conversation with the host of Locked On Athletics, Jason Burke. And Jason, thank you so much for joining us today, and hope you and your family are staying safe.
Thank you so much for having me, Connor.
And so we wanted to talk some athletics, some Orioles athletics crossover, and that was the plan as we made this plan to do this earlier in the week. But of course, the news coming out yesterday that the Athletics no longer planning on paying their minor leaguers the $400 per week they were paying them while we wait for baseball to come back during the pandemic. So, you know, a lot of people have shared their thoughts on social media. I know you've used your podcast to share your thoughts, but I just wanted to get kind of what was that initial reaction from you when you see that news break yesterday?
If you were following the Locked On A's Twitter page, you saw me. I went on a bunch of tweet storms. I am not happy about this because it's one thing to, you know, furlough front office employees that are making a bunch of money. I get it to a degree. Still, when your campaign is rooted in Oakland, I think you should be paying your employees no matter what. But to the minor leaguers at $400 a week, that would roughly be $1 million overall to pay over 200 minor leaguers through the end of August. And they're not doing that. And that's ridiculous because the owner's worth $2.3 billion and not happy about it. I used a bunch of swears in my podcast from last night. And yeah, so my thoughts are over there for sure. But that's my general consensus is I am not on board with any of this, especially with the marketing campaign they've been giving us.
Yeah, being able to swear, a nice part about being on a podcast instead of on the radio, which makes it nice for these situations. But you know, you give the numbers about the, you know, would be $1 million and the owner worth over $2 billion. You know, even you start doing the math in your head, you're like, well, it's through August, but you know, maybe if they had to pay them longer, it'd be this and this. But then every time you do math, all you have to do in your brain is go back to, it doesn't really matter how much they'd be paying them because the owner in the end can afford it. And I think that's just the big thing with people who push back with their losing money. And, you know, it's so many weeks for guys who won't be playing. You just have to go back to your mind every single time and say, it doesn't matter. They can afford to do it. And they're just choosing not to. And that's kind of what it comes down to for me.
I think that my big argument has been, in what business can you, you know, start up and operate where you will never, ever, ever incur a loss ever? There's always risk involved and you have to burden that risk. I'm sorry. I mean, I know that this is a pandemic and it sucks and, you know, nobody was expecting it, but you have to have a slush fund or something. You have to have some sort of extra money for when rainy days happen. if you know, we're supposed to have one for just being regular people to pay, you know, hospital bills or whatever it is, how come they can't just you know, pay their employees? Because I've seen a few minor leaguers in the times, you know, the Twitter stream, and they are not happy. And if you, and the draft is, you know, a couple weeks away, there's no way that they're going to be signing all these guys that aren't going to be drafted because of a shorter draft season for $20,000. Who's going to want to come play for the A's after this? Nobody. They're not going to sign anybody. They're going to get five guys and they're all going to be miserable. So it's a little stupid. So I've been reaching out to adopt a minor leaguer, and I want to try and, you know, get some minor leaguers taken care of in the A system, because this is not good times.
Yeah, great thing to do there. And you bring up a point I hadn't even, my head and thinking about all this hadn't even made it to that next step yet that you mentioned. With the draft coming up, obviously they're all their picks in the first five rounds will get signing bonuses that will obviously help a lot. But that $20,000 cap on the rest of the guys, you know, you're telling them, hey, you're going to get $20,000 and then we're not going to pay you, let's say, until next March. That's, as you said, not very enticing for guys who wouldn't have really been free agents and now will get a chance to be free agents, those who aren't drafted. As you said, not a great chance they end up in Oakland. But just wanted to talk about that at the top here because pressing news in baseball. And we've seen other teams come out today and say, you know, yes, we're paying our players through June and then we'll reevaluate. And hopefully everyone else sees the pushback to this and pays all their minor league players throughout the rest of the season. But I want to get to the guys who are in the major leagues with the Athletics and a team that went to the postseason last year, despite losing the AL wild card game. They did make it, even though they have to play the Astros 19 times a year, still found a way to get into the postseason last year. And this Oakland team was really good last year. 97 wins, finished second in the AL West, losing to the Rays in the wild card game. They may not have the star power around the board that the Astros or the Yankees may have in the American League, but what kind of made this team tick and get to 97 wins last year?
I mean, you got to start with Chapman and Olson. Those are that's the heartbeat of the whole team right there. Chapman just, I mean, they both play great defense. Olson missed a month and still was cranking out dingers. And, you know, he picks it at first base. I know that Marcus Semien's been making huge strides defensively, but I think that putting Olson over there at first base to pick, you know, what could be errors sometimes definitely helps. It didn't help Jurickson Profar, which I think we will get into a little bit later. But, you know, I think that, you know, having Olson there at first base definitely helps the infield defense as a whole. And, I mean, they all have, I think everybody except for Profar was nominated for a gold glove in the infield. So, you know, they've got some guys. And you start with defense, you go with a little bit of team chemistry because a lot of these guys have come up together. And they're also pretty decent players. They just play in Oakland, so nobody watches them.
And it's interesting that lineup, and you mentioned Semien, who obviously had his breakout year last year. I don't think a lot of people know Marcus Semien by the end of the year. Now, he wasn't going to win it, but he was in the AL MVP conversation for a bit there. That's how good he was last year. And looking kind of up and down this A's lineup, you know, they're a team that's always known for having a solid amount of depth as well. Now, they didn't really go out this offseason and spend really at all on any position players. So you mentioned a guy like Jurickson Profar who played almost 140 games. Is his spot, you know, in jeopardy? Is a guy like Franklin Barreto coming to take it if we get a 2020 season? Or how do you feel if there will be any changes to that A's lineup, knowing that they didn't really go out and spend on any hitters?
Second base is completely open because they traded Profar over to the Padres for Austin Hedges and, oh God, I forget. I like him, but Buddy Reed, there you go, center fielder, who has a lot of speed, plays decent defense. We can see if he can hit, you know, as he progresses in his maturation process. But, yeah, they got Barreto, Jorge Mateo, maybe – it's been 3 months since, you know, I've really been paying attention to the roster. So I'm like, oh, I used to rattle these off. Tony Kemp was in there and Chad Pinder. They had Vimeo Machin, who was a Rule 5 pick. So they had a bunch of guys that, you know, can fill the spot. It's just a matter of finding, is one of them going to be like that Jed Lowry type who was, you know, a really solid offensive contributor. And I know that, you know, Jed Lowry's not a huge bar to jump over, but, you know, it proved to be one last year. So,
now this team on the pitching side, it's definitely a bullpen team when you look at the arms. And now some guys had some really good seasons. Frankie Montes was really good in kind of half a season last year. And some guys like Mike Fiers and Brett Anderson even really stepped up for this team last year, but it's kind of anchored by that bullpen. And a guy that, you know, the Orioles had in spring training a few years ago and I believe was the last cut from the Orioles bullpen a few years back before he made it over to Oakland is Liam Hendricks, who took over in that closer role last year. Blake Treinen, who was the darling reliever in 2018, kind of gave up that spot in 2019. So for people who don't know anything about Liam Hendricks, what does he bring and what won him that closer job?
He was an all-star last year and he had a 180 ERA with a 240 ERA plus. If you know, you go the sabermetric route, he was great across the board and he made significant jumps in K rate and walk rate. You know, K rate went up, walk rate went down. And he was just really, really, really good. And he'd been like an average reliever the 3 years that Oakland had had him, but they also DFA'd him in 2018. And then he came back and took the closer role, which is insane. And I think that I'm cautiously optimistic with him personally, because I mean, I saw what happened with Blake Treinen being one of the best relievers of all time for 1 year and then completely falling apart. So, I mean, maybe he goes back and has like a 3.5 ERA or something like that. And I don't know that he's going to have a 1.81 ERA again, but if he can, you know, not completely fall apart, I think that we'd all be kind of happy with that. And because they've got other guys down in the bullpen that, you know, could break out like a JB Wendelken. TJ McFarland, I know he struggled with Arizona, but he's a decent option. If you take him out of Arizona, he had really great road numbers. So I think that's something they might be banking on. Lou Trevino is a bounce back candidate. They got Yusmeiro Petit, who's just been solid wherever he's pitched. And Joaquin Soria, he's fine.
It's kind of been Joaquin Soria's whole career. He had a couple years where he went above fine. But for most of the time, he's just been like, yeah, you want him in your bullpen. You probably don't want him as your closer. You know, you mentioned TJ McFarland. There's another former Orioles guy who's still sticking around in the big leagues. But one last thing on the 2019 A's, you know, I mentioned that starting rotation and how they got the job done. With Sean Manaea, you know, getting injured last year and then going into 2020, is he the guy still who's considered the ace of this A's staff?
I think opening day-wise, yes. But I think that come 2021, I mean, it depends on if they play a season. If they play a season, then he probably will not be the ace of the team by next year. If they do not play, and, you know, guys like Jesus Luzardo, who is the prize prospect right now, if he is not able to develop against major league pitching, then, you know, you might see a little bit more of a Manaea reign. AJ Puck's another guy that could be really good, but his injury history is a little bit scary to me. So I think that eventually he could be a bullpen guy, given the depth that they have in the starting rotation and whatnot. So it'll be interesting, but I do like Sean Manaea a lot. I don't know that he's going to be the ace of the team for, you know, more than past this year.
Hey, back to the interview in just a sec, but wanted to tell you about Built Bars. They're tasty and they're healthy. It's a protein bar, but it tastes like a candy bar. You can get it in 16 different flavors. They're all covered in chocolate, easy to eat, and good for you as well. Great for a health-conscious person. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Just 20 grams of protein in, for example, the peanut butter brownie bar, which that's the best flavor combination right there. Peanut butter brownie, you can't beat that one. Just 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, 3 grams of net carbs. You can't beat that in a protein bar that's good for you, and it really tastes good as well. So you can go to builtbar.com and use promo code locked on, and you'll get $10 off your first order. Use promo code locked on for $10 off at builtbar.com. And you mentioned Puck. I know he got a little bit of time up in the bullpen last year and looked pretty good. I know that's one of the exciting prospects they have. But going to the other reason we have you on here on the pod is, you know, some of the crossover guys with the Orioles and the Athletics over the last few years. We've mentioned a couple already in T.J. McFarland and Liam Hendricks. But a guy that's been talked about a little bit recently in baseball is Aaron Brooks, because he's been over in the KBO with the Kia Tigers and is trying to resurrect his major league career. But he finished his year with the Orioles last year, but was with the A's for 6 starts, 15 games overall for Brooks last season. He was one of those guys, at least last year for Oakland, that they tried to plug in as a starter at the back end of the rotation before they acquired Homer Bailey. But, you know, Brooks was there for a couple years with Oakland, 2015, then back in 18 and 19. What was, you know, his kind of career with the A's in a nutshell before he was waived last year?
He came over in the Ben Zobrist deal with Kansas City, which netted them Sean Manaea. And he pitched a little bit, and then I think he had Tommy John, which is why there's that gap in his baseball reference page. I'm pretty sure he missed some time with that. And then he came back, and he was okay. You know, you didn't really look forward to an Aaron Brooks start, but, you know, every now and then he'd be all right. He didn't have a lot of swing and miss in his game. His strikeout rate was always around, like, 6. And his walk rate was decent. I mean, if he had been, like, a lefty, he could have been, like, a crafty left-hander. But he was a righty, so he was just fine. You know, he's more of a somebody's hurt, we need somebody to pitch, call up Aaron, which isn't to say anything, you know, about him as a person. I'm sure he's a lovely guy, but, you know, Aaron Brooks in Oakland was fine. He's kind of like Joaquin Soria.
Yeah, and that's kind of what he was in Baltimore. He was fine. He was okay. And now he's over in the KBO, and, you know, you hope for his sake he pitches well over there and gets another major league contract to come back in 2021. But last thing for the Orioles and A's crossover, I'm going to give you three names who have played for the A's and the Orioles over the last few seasons: Corbin Joseph, Renato Nunez, and Nick Hundley. When you think about those three guys, did any of them make any of a lasting impact in an Athletics uniform?
In an Athletics uniform, no. I would say that Renato Nunez was somebody that they probably wanted to keep, but he played third base, and they got Matt Chapman, and he is much better. So they didn't, and then they had, you know, Chris Davis as the DH and Matt Olson as the first baseman. So there wasn't really a spot for Renato Nunez. I'm sure that, you know, you guys are enjoying him plenty. I know that he's still crushing the ball, which he was known for. But Corbin Joseph was brought up. I was looking up on Baseball Reference. Great website. And he was basically added in August of last year because Jurickson Profar was terrible defensively. So they were like, hey, how about this guy? He'd been mashing in AAA. He had hit really well. He had a 10.06 OPS, which is crazy. Also, you know, inflated balls and playing in Las Vegas, but, you know, still. And that was in 400 plate appearances or so. They were seeing if they could find somebody who could play second base besides Jurickson Profar, and he was not the answer. And then Nick Hundley, I remember his at-bats in Japan to open the season last year very clearly. I think he grounded into, like, 3 double plays in his first 2 games. And in looking it up, he grounded into double plays in 10% of his at-bats last year. So he did not get a lot of playing time. And you know how hard that is? If there's somebody on first base every time, that's still really hard. There's not even going to be a runner on first every time, or, you know, a runner on base every time you come up, and he still managed to do it 10% of the time. That's ridiculous. So he wasn't great. Although I will share that I was doing some press work, I guess, in the Giants. Not for the Giants, but, you know, I was in their clubhouse and stuff, and Nick Hundley seemed like a great person and a great leader. And I was excited about having him there. I think he might have just not been a fit with the A's offensively and whatnot, so he didn't get a lot of playing time. But he seems like a good clubhouse guy, so I will give him that.
Yeah, you mentioned that. He came over to the Orioles because, you know, this is going a little further back, but in 2014, when he came over to the Orioles, it was in a trade with the Padres because, you know, the Orioles all-star catcher, Matt Wieters, gets injured, has to have Tommy John right in the middle of the Orioles, you know, trying to win a division crown. And they bring in Hundley thinking he'd be, you know, just the backup and some depth. And he ended up starting the majority of the playoff games that year, just because he fit in so well. And the guys in the clubhouse seem to like him. So it's good that he's kind of continued that mantra around him. But I wanted to give you one question about the A's moving forward at the major league level. If we have a 2020 season, say we play a 70 or 80 game season, the A's coming off of 97 wins, the roster looking very, very similar with a couple additions to what it looked like last year. What would be the outlook for this Athletics team if there is a 2020 season?
I think the outlook for pretty much any team, but especially the A's, is avoiding cold streaks, because one or two bad weeks can kill an entire season, and staying healthy. Those are the two keys for every Major League Baseball team. So I feel like if the A's stay healthy and, you know, play 500 baseball most of the time and go on like one hot streak, they're fine. That basically bodes well for same rules apply for every other team. But I think the A's have a decent amount of depth. So adding, you know, expanding their rosters is something that could actually help them out a little bit. If they still want to, you know, put innings limits on Luzardo and Puck. And yeah, they still got like Caprillion and Grant Holmes and other guys down in the minors. They can pitch some significant innings and whatnot and see how that rolls. But I think that they'd still be a playoff team, but the Mariners last year were like 16-8 in the first month. So they can go on a hot streak too. Nobody is out of this. And I think it could be a very fun season if everybody can get their stuff together. So we'll see. I'm hoping that the A's win. And I do have one question. We'll make an agreement. If the A's or the Orioles win the World Series this year, it counts. But is there like a specific team that if they won, you're like, nope, sorry, shortened season doesn't count?
Well, definitely the Astros. I think everyone would agree.
Yes.
They would not like that to count. I definitely, from my perspective, you just throw Yankees and Red Sox in there. And I think a lot of people would agree with that one too, that one doesn't count. But other than that, I think across the major leagues, I'd be willing to count anyone else's World Series title.
Oh, for sure. And I'd feel bad if like the Mariners somehow won, or like Texas. I don't think that if it was like their first World Series and it was this one, and then some people are going to give it a question mark or an asterisk or something. I'm like, that makes me feel bad, because I'm like, oh, you want to be happy for the people that got their first World Series and whatnot, and that would suck. So hopefully that doesn't happen.
It would be the most Mariners way ever to win their first World Series, for it to be in an 80-game season and have a bunch of people question how legitimate it really is. Because we know, as you mentioned from last year, they'll have stretches any year where they get insanely hot and then get insanely cold. But if they could get insanely hot at the right time during a shortened season, you never know. But you mentioned the World Series and the Athletics. So one last thing. You know, this A's team has been interesting because they've never been – obviously big spenders in free agency, and we know about Moneyball and how that introduced people to the Athletics. But they've gone through these waves over the past 10 years of getting to the playoffs and then kind of bottoming out a little bit and then right back up into the playoffs. So does, with this group and the younger core they have now and the bullpen, does it feel like a team that can sustain it for a little longer to maybe win a World Series? Or does it feel like it might take, you know, another dip off to retool again in a couple years to get this team to a World Series title, you know, in this decade, I guess, as we're starting a new one?
The front office has definitely been penciling 2020 as the season that they're going to start like legitimately contending. So we've all been very excited for this baseball season that is not happening right now. And like, they got Marcus Semien, who's going to be a free agent, and with money being an issue for the owners right now and, you know, a shortened season and all that stuff, it'll be interesting to see what his free agent market value is. I think that the owners are going to be a little bit more tight-fisted with their money this offseason, so not spending a bunch of money on free agents and whatnot. So maybe the A's have a chance at re-signing him for a year or two, but I mean, they've got some middle infield guys that could also come up and take his spot if they need to, but I think that they'd like to keep Marcus Semien. Also, I'm talking about the A's spending money when they just decided to not pay 200 minor leaguers and furlough employees, but, you know, still a dream. But, you know, they've got Puck and Luzardo who are, you know, two big pieces of their future, I think. You got Manaea. So they got three pretty good, actually, left-handed starters that they're going to be around for a little while. You got Chapman and Olsen around for at least three more years. They've got the main pieces that are going to be there for the next few years, hopefully. I think that what they usually do is people get to into arbitration, like a Matt Chapman would probably be the guy that's making the most money for the A's, and then they would trade him. And that's how they keep the cycle going, but also don't have to pay these guys and all that stuff. So if they can, you know, avoid that, that'd be great. And I think that the idea was they're going to open up this ballpark and then they'll have money magically and then they can start spending it. But with construction shut down and, you know, all of the, the place that I live in California here in the Bay Area, they got lots of those cars. It's super fun. Anyways, so yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they're going to start spending money before the ballpark plan is approved and all that stuff. But I'm not holding my breath on it, so we might have to go through one more cycle of tear down and build back up.
It's always interesting to see what the A's are doing and what the team looks like on a year-to-year basis, because you just never know, as you said, with the tearing it down, build it back up, and the, you know, they'll trade guys away before they really have to pay them and try and bring the next group of prospects up. But Jason, thank you so much for joining me today to talk some A's, talk some Orioles. And of course, you the listeners, check out Locked On Athletics, where I'm sure Jason will continue his coverage of what the A's are doing and their refusal to pay the minor leaguers and what that fallout will be. But Jason, again, thanks, and I hope you're staying safe.
Oh, thank you so much, man. We'll do it again soon.
So again, our thanks to Jason Burke, the host of Locked On Athletics here on the Locked On Podcast Network, for joining us again to give his thoughts on the A's owner not paying the minor league players, and some former A's, former Orioles stuff there on the pod as well. Good conversation with Jason. And you always remember, the owners have the money. They're the ones choosing not to pay it. And when you look at the collapse of minor league baseball going on and you look at a potential labor dispute even added on to the health and safety dispute of getting Major League Baseball back this season, a lot of this falls on the owners and their just lack of want to use all this money that they have readily available in their pockets. That'll do it for this week here on the pod. If you go back in the archives, earlier this week we had a couple of good episodes. Earlier in the week, we had Alex Fast and Scott Chu of Pitcher List on Wednesday to talk about PitchCon, which is going on now over at Pitcher List, and talk a lot about the KBO too. The two of them have been covering the KBO, and we talked about the six former Orioles in the league. And then back on Tuesday, Bryce Patterick was on the show. He's the host of Locked On Rangers. We did a look back at the Koji Uehara for Chris Davis and Tommy Hunter trade in 2011, looked at the 2012 wild card game, and some other minor Rangers to Orioles guys like Hanser Alberto and Renato Nunez in the last couple of years. Up next week, when we return, we will start our MLB draft coverage. When we are back with you next week, it will already be June. And that's right, Monday is June 1st, and the draft, June 10th and 11th this year. Remember, we had Taylor Blake Ward on a couple weeks back to talk about the Orioles' potential pick, mocked right now to, at number two, take the Vanderbilt shortstop Austin Martin. But again, the draft, just five rounds this year. First round will be June 10th, rounds two through five on June 11th. We're going to have a lot of people come talk about who the Orioles could take at number two. Guys like Spencer Torkelson, Austin Martin, Asa Lacy, Emerson Hancock, Nick Gonzalez, kind of the five names, the five college players there that could go to the Orioles. And we'll have somebody come on and talk about each one of them as we lead up to the draft with our next few episodes over the next 2 weeks. So next week, the draft preview starts here on the pod. But until then, this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And next up, maybe tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Locked On MLB.